Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinths in the News for Monday, November 30th. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Couve. That's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon, as I will be doing most Mondays at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. My lead-in music is the first cut off of Susan Alexander's CD Sequentia called Ecos, which is short for icosahedron, the water symbol in sacred geometry. Sequentia is music using tones recorded from DNA vibrations. Susan recorded these tones in 1988 with the help of Dr. David Diemer, at that time a cell biologist at the Davis campus of the University of California. So if any of you would like to chat while we're on the air, please go to christiana-anea at blogtalkradio.com. Today, my guest is Washington, D.C. artist and peace activist, one of the original founders of the Labyrinth Society, Sandra Wasco Flood. Thank you, Sandra, for taking time out of this busy time of year to join me today. Welcome to Labyrinth in the News.
Oh, thank you so much, Christiana. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, you know, I have so much to ask you. So much information to find out about you, and there you have so much going on in your life pertaining to Labyrinth. You know, I hear people in the background. Do you hear anything?
No, I don't. Actually, I don't hear anyone right now, but I had the website on, and it was... there were people talking on that.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, well, let's just keep going because hopefully I don't hear anything now, so I think it's all fixed.
I just took it off the line because it was out of sync, I think, a little bit. I mean, your words were, my website was out of sync with your words. It was a little behind.
Okay.
So I turned it
all
off.
All right, well, yeah, sometimes other things like that can interfere when you're online like this. So, now it sounds fine. So let's get cracking here. You have two websites, wascoart.com and livinglabyrinthsforpeace.org. Both of them highlight your interactive labyrinth light installations. Can you tell us a bit about these?
Yes, actually, what I've been trying to do is do the mission of our new organization, which is to do labyrinths of art, science, technology, and nature, and to make peace with those things. And the Dance of the Labyrinth, which is my largest installation and oldest, is composed of pressure-sensitive computer-programmed light boxes, and they light up when you walk on them. The boxes contain phototransparencies and superimposed images of mummies and icons, people, and animals. They're sort of Rorschach-like images, and they intend to show the single reality of existence. They repeat the cycles of life, death, and rebirth that are the physical and psychological cycles that we all experience in this labyrinth of life.
Well, how did you figure out how to make these? Did you have help or what? This is sounds like a very complicated and complex idea.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is a complex idea. I had the vision of the labyrinth coming out of the ground in the Great Kiva of Chaco Canyon, and I just tried to replicate what I saw. And I did get help. I had to research every part of it. I had to find glass that you could walk on that wouldn't break. And so I researched that, and I went to various glass places and found this laminated safety glass that you put in your car window, you know, and it has two pieces of quarter-inch glass and a piece of plexiglass in between. And then I had to find a way to have these light up. And I found a computer expert who actually worked for Disney World, and he took some old IBM computer that people were throwing out. In fact, it was the oldest one that exists, I believe. It has floppy disks, and he just thought it was a great lark to put a design on that. And so he made various programs for me, and I told him what I wanted. I said I wanted all these paths to light up through the elements of earth, air, fire, and water, and changing elements, merging elements, and center. And then I wanted it to start with a moonlight sequence with phosphorescent paint, and then the paths would light up. When you got to the center, there would be surrounding figures light up. So there, and then when you returned, walked the labyrinth back out, it would be moonlight again. And so he was able to do programs with these light sequences. And I could after he wrote the program, I could put the lights on various different ways, you know. And so I could write into the programs how I wanted them, what I wanted to come on first and so on, and what I wanted to come on together. And it was all activated by pressure and also by a light on or a light off could activate something.
So the reason why you would have these sequences different is based on the installation itself, or the venue, or the reason why the occasion. What would be the reason
changing?
Just,
it was just to suit a person's mood or personality, you know, or what they wanted to do that day. And I have one sequence or one program that when you step on the first block, everything comes on. And I'm finding that people that are extroverted really like this program. And another one I have is you step on the block and maybe one path lights up, and then that one goes off when you step on the next one, and there's very few lights in the whole thing, and oftentimes introverts like that one, or they have people have a problem. And I'm about ready to name these different sequences, you know, and people can choose which one they want to walk. Another one, you step on the first one and you see the path for about 3 seconds, and then it goes dead. And the overhead phosphorescent lights are on, so you can still see where you're walking. But that's sort of like life. It's a teaser, you know. And, you know, you have to keep going on. And it's metaphors for life and for people's journeys. And another one I have is you walk the first path, and then it goes off. So it's like it's finished, you know, the past is gone, you know, and so on. And so I got these ideas from, they're very dramatic and theatrical, and whatever felt good, you know, and felt good with the music and everything.
So you have there's a panel at the entrance where people can press the program that they want to follow.
There's a computer. They're on a computer. They're on the floppy disk computer, the old IBM. Ancient computer, and I have 8 programs on there, and they can choose which program they want, and I generally run the computer. It's not very hard, but I say, you know, which program. Generally, I have them do the first one, which is what I first I described to you. That was my original idea, that you start in the moonlight when it's dark. The metaphor is going from darkness to light, you know. And then you follow each path, the earth path, the water path, fire path, air path, changing elements, merging elements, and then you stand on the center mirror and you confront yourself. When you get there, all the surrounding figures light up and rotate like in a dance idea. And then they stop and it becomes moonlight again. It's like you, as you come in to the labyrinth, you relate to the different images, and as you go out, you bring your own experiences, you know.
Wow, it sounds amazing, Sandra. Absolutely amazing. Now, hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Are you there?
I think someone's trying to call on this line or something. So.
Okay. All right. From what I read in your information, you're doing this Labyrinth installation at the Sub-Basement Studios in Baltimore, Maryland, and you've been doing it for about a year there?
Yes, I did have an exhibit there, and that was starting in December of 2008, and it went through, I believe, March. It was up, and that was a very important venue, and I had various peace events there. It was important because it was right in downtown Washington and had lots of, downtown Baltimore, had lots of exposure, and it was, in a sense, a retrospective of a lot of my prints and wall light boxes and other artwork that relates to the Labyrinth. I had a spiral series there and a cycle series and so on. And we had peace events. We had various speakers like Holman McCarthy, who is head of the peace studies at Georgetown University. He used to write for the Washington Post. And we had poetry readings on peace, in which I shared some of my poems and some of the local poets shared theirs. And then we had a mandala workshop, you know, because mandalas are certainly, a labyrinth is a type of mandala.
Yes.
And so that was a very important show, and it brought together a lot of people and a lot of peace events.
Well, I'm going to go back a little bit because I don't know about you, but when I'm listening to this, if I didn't know that you were an established artist to begin with, I would think, oh, my golly, how did she even think to do these kinds of things? But you have a website called Wasco Art, and you have been an artist for many, many years in different mediums, correct?
Yes, mainly prints. Mainly prints, and then I went into more sculpture and then interactive sculpture and lots of photography. You know, I've been working for over 40 years, and each series sort of built on the one before, and the final one is the Labyrinth, which includes everything else. You know, I think that's the biggest archetype I've ever dealt with, you know.
And what compelled you to make Labyrinth part of your life's mission?
It was simply the next, archetype. And then when I found out that there was a Labyrinth group meeting in St. Louis, I had the visionary experience in Chaco Canyon, and the next day I went straight to this book in a bookstore, Labyrinth's Ancient Myths and Modern Uses by Sig Lofgren, and I read it from cover to cover. And I realized that the labyrinth belonged inside that kiva. And since then, they'd found a spiral, a ceremonial spiral under there. But once I met with the people in St. Louis who were interested in labyrinths, they came in from all different fields. I saw what a wonderful thing it was and what good the labyrinth could do in the world. And as I say, there were people from every different field, and it related to every different subject and every different culture and every different religion. And it just seemed like the quintessential symbol or archetype that I was compelled to work with. And my take on it was different. I thought that doing an art labyrinth with technology would put the symbol into this time period, and that we needed so much to use technology in an aesthetic manner and to make peace with technology and nature so it wouldn't completely destroy our globe and that it could enhance things. And so I felt that this was my particular mission then.
Okay. Well, you seem to have really done an amazing amount of installations and as a response to that with everything that you've been doing. Speaking of that, you directed the Labyrinth Societies. You were one of the founders of the Labyrinth Society.
Yes.
And you directed their first traveling labyrinth show, the Labyrinth for Peace 2000?
It was the first labyrinth project. Yeah, it was their first project of the Labyrinth Society. And again, I received, what happened was, I was walking the Dance of the Labyrinth, at that time it was on my studio, it was not the Labyrinth Center, which it is now, and I asked it where it wanted to be, and it told me four times loudly, in the Capitol. And I was a member of the Women's Caucus for Art here in the D.C. area, and the president was the curator of the Capitol Collection. And we were going to our holiday brunch, and I sat across from her. I asked her, could you have a show in the Capitol? She said, yeah, you can have one in the Cannon Rotunda of the House of Representatives or in the Senate, but you have to go through your congressman or senator. And so I just went over to the House of Representatives, Cannon Rotunda, the next day, and I saw there a circle with 12 concentric circles on the floor and a cathedral-like dome overhead. And you could easily tape down a Chart Cathedral labyrinth there. And there you could, and I saw the representatives walking the labyrinth, and that, you know, the sacred and secular would finally be together, and the political and the spiritual. And I was just, it was like, it was a vision, and I saw this fire coming up out of the center and everything. And I got a little scared, and I thought, I don't know if I want to do this. You know, why don't I tell somebody else in the Labyrinth Society about it, and they can go through their congressman. And I'm not a very political person. Basically, I've been trying to do universal themes in my artwork and not read the day-to-day happenings and take sides and all that stuff. And so so I sat on the idea for a month, and then I realized I was being called. And so I never thought it would not happen, but it was extremely difficult. And I got a lot of good personal connections and a lot of help, and it took 2 years to pull it off. And there were many turns, as I say. You know, 2 years before, 2 weeks before the event was supposed to start, the Sergeant of Arms said that we can't have that in a public office space on Capitol Hill. We can't have any activities like that, because then we'd have to let in the Ku Klux Klan or something like that, you know. And so, fortunately, I knew the wife of the chair of the House of Representatives, and she got me a meeting with the Sergeant of Arms the very next day. And he did, her husband. And the sergeants thought that was a good idea to have labyrinths, but they said that, you know, that they told me that whole story about having to let in everybody. And they said, well, why don't you have a demonstration on the east lawn of the U.S. Capitol? And so I went out there and I saw the east lawn, which was right behind the Capitol, in front of the Library of Congress, in view of the Supreme Court and the House of Representatives. And it was a huge lawn. And I thought, oh, you could have lots of labyrinths out there, and just think of all the people that you could attract, and, you know, that could actually walk them and everything. And so in the next hour, I went right over to the police station, and I signed up for a demonstration for inner peace. And I can just still see the words jumping off the page, because that had never been done, you know, before. And then there were all sorts of rules about demonstrators on the East Lawn. This wasn't on the mall where you can do almost anything. You couldn't have any kind of, you couldn't have any wood larger than, I think they said 3 or 4 inches, because they didn't want anyone, you know, striking anyone or anything happening. You couldn't have music. You couldn't sell anything. There was just very, very strict restrictions. And so we used surveyor flags, little white surveyor flags. We made two. The Labyrinth Society helped, and other people that were members. And we made a large Chart Cathedral labyrinth with 1,800 flags. And we made a concentric labyrinth that I think we had 700 or 800 flags. And people brought canvas labyrinths, and one was a peace labyrinth, which had a picture of a globe and a labyrinth over it. And that was done by Elizabeth McGowan, who was a New York City artist. And the Santa Rosa Labyrinth was brought in from California, Leah Good's Labyrinth, and just went on and on. And we had up to 7 labyrinths out there at any given time. And the demonstration went on for 2 weeks in March, and from 9 to 5, and it was very peaceful. And lots of tourists came from all over the world. There were groups like there was a choir group, you know, and all kinds of people walked it. And basically, it was a very peaceful experience. And
did you manage to then go into the rotunda and actually do it in there too?
No, we did not do that, but we had an exhibit from labyrinths from around the world. And I have to say that Marilyn Larson, who is a member of the Labyrinth Society and an artist, actually co-directed this whole project. She was the education director, and I was the project director. And she's the one that actually made all these panels with photos of labyrinths from all around the world. And we had they went all around the Cannon Rotunda on the walls. And so people could go in there and look at those. And we still have that exhibit. It is now a part of our Living Labyrinths for Peace organization, and it travels. And people can rent it, you know, for fundraisers to build labyrinths or for whatever educational purposes they want.
And so do you actually have your light labyrinth installation available for people to walk at this time?
Yes, I do. The original one, Dance of the Labyrinth, is in the Living Labyrinths for Peace Center in Washington, D.C. It's where my former studio was. It is a warehouse building in which there are a few businesses and nonprofit organizations and other artists. And it's open by appointment. And generally on the weekends is when I'm there. And also a couple days during the week. It's basically open by appointment, and we have workshops and events there.
And what's the address?
It's 57N as in Nancy Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 2001. And if people are interested in coming, they need to call the Living Labyrinth for Peace number, which is my cell number, and that's 703-217-6706.
Great. That's great. Did you ever take any of these, this interactive labyrinth installation to other countries or outside of the United States?
Not yet, but actually when we were forming our organization, we put in our mission statement that we were going to do this nationally and internationally eventually, and I certainly hope to do that. And what's our website is reaching around the world, and sometimes we get, you know, responses from other countries to the website. But so far we haven't done any in another country yet, but I'm interested in doing that. One of the ideas we had was doing art technology labyrinths in the country using the technology that was available in that country. And so in developing countries, we would be using other sorts of technologies, you know, but we would be doing some sort of technology labyrinths.
So local technology for that country with that country's issues in mind or consolidation of, yeah.
Right.
Interesting. Have you found that the response to these labyrinth installations has changed over the years? I mean, you've been doing this now for a number of years.
When I was thinking about that, I thought, well, actually, the responses have been very, very good. People are very excited, and that the response has basically stayed the same. And the words that people most often use to describe the labyrinth experience is peace, power, and mystery. And I think the art and the interactive installation is the thing that you know, inspires mystery and creativity. And those are the things that are coming out the most. And it has been just as popular at the beginning when it first came out as it is now. But the change is that more and more people know about labyrinths. And I think it's a little more easily accepted because at the beginning it was so strange that you know, some people had comments about, you know, they couldn't relate to the images or they didn't like the music or, you know, all kinds of things. Or I don't want to walk on a Christ icon, you know, or, you know, an icon. It was strange to walk on images, you know. And so but this isn't happening very much anymore at all, I'd say.
And so in terms of teaching, because you have been teaching, you've been enlightening people about the labyrinth and about your work, and you mentioned the mandala work. What are some of the other ways that you have taught and expanded from the experience of the labyrinth for people in other venues?
Okay. Well, I've been teaching a lot in the local schools through the Washington Performing Arts, and I've been giving labyrinths workshops for creativity and peace, and the students have been painting or creating labyrinths on canvas and also on the playgrounds with traffic marker paint. And we've been doing like hands of peace labyrinth where they will do hand prints, and we'll do feet of peace labyrinth where they do feet prints, footprints, and then they make wishes for peace for themselves, family, friends, community, and the world. I've been relating the labyrinths to many different subjects, and basically in these workshops we do art and writing and some timeline, social studies, a timeline of labyrinths from around the world and some geography. And one of the goals now of our organization is to do an interdisciplinary labyrinth teaching manual that relates labyrinths to every single subject.
That would be very helpful.
Yes, and that's, I'm actually working on that right now. I have a commission to do a labyrinth at a school, Linwood Elementary School in Haverford, Pennsylvania, and they're very interested in having the labyrinth continue because it really needs to have a follow-up because the students will graduate and then you won't always have the same teachers. And so I'm going to be giving a teacher orientation class, an introduction to the labyrinth, and going to start this manual finally. And I'm going to be collaborating with like counselors and math teachers and other teachers for ideas, using the labyrinth and for different age levels and so on. And so that's going to happen.
Well, that sort of segues into my next question. So now what are the projects that you're working on? It looks like to me that you're spending a lot of time out in the Southwest.
Yes. We're living half the year in Angel Fire, New Mexico, and half the year in Baltimore, Maryland. And in the my last 6 months in New Mexico that I spent the summer and the fall, a lot has happened in the labyrinth world. And I'm going to be working on a Tahoe sacred spaces theme. The Tahoe government is going to have a sacred spaces theme this coming year. And this summer, I'm going to be organizing some events and tours of labyrinths around Tahoe. And there's several.
So the summer of 2010.
Places. Yes. Yes. This coming summer. Uh-huh.
And you're going to be installing labyrinths or temporary labyrinths there?
Temporary labyrinths, some permanent ones. Some people are interested in permanent ones. Right now there is the Moreno Valley High School in Angel Fire, New Mexico, that wants a permanent labyrinth. And there's the Anansi Public Charter School in Arroyo Seco that wants a permanent labyrinth, outdoor labyrinth. And so I have two labyrinth commissions coming up. I'm going to be teaching a class at the Harwood Museum to the children there, children's workshop. And there's other places, there are proposals out to El Monte Sacrado Hotel that's interested in labyrinths. These are all, you know, the proposals out. People have interest, and I'm just waiting to see, I'm going to be following up on it. There are already several labyrinths in Taos that we were going to tour. There's one at the Adobe and Pines Inn at San Geronimo's Bed and Breakfast. So there's a lot.
Are you taking the people that are in your organization now to out there with you to help, or do you enlist local people to help
you?
Well,
I have people on the board that are in both places. I have people here in the East Coast and out in New Mexico that are on the board, and I'm looking for more volunteers to help.
I guess that's a constant.
That's a constant. The volunteers are a constant. Yeah. But I have, I have people on the board both places, actually, and I'm looking to increase the board and to do more fundraising and that sort of thing, and that's kind of a priority. And I'm also, when I went to the Labyrinth Society conference, I found that lots of people were interested in having a conference in Taos, and so as soon as I get the committee together, I'm going to submit a proposal to the Labyrinth Society for that.
For 2011 or 2012?
Yeah, it's open those 2 years, so we'll see how that goes. But first, I need to get the committee going because can't pull that off without help, But I think this would be wonderful because the Labyrinth Society has never had a conference there, and it's a very historic, wonderful, different state, you know. And also,
yes, I have walked them in not in Taos, but in Santa Fe, and then also Cordelia Rose's Labyrinth down in her part of New Mexico, the Equine Labyrinth. I've been to her place.
Uh-huh.
She's in southwestern New Mexico. And I installed a labyrinth in Arizona, just over the border at the in Benson at the Texas Canyon, and there I installed one of the Man in the Maze, the Hopi Man in the Maze labyrinths there. So I'm very familiar with that area and the labyrinths there. It's a wonderful place and very ancient. The energy is so ancient and definitely labyrinthine.
Well, I really feel like I've come home because my artwork I've been resonating with the ancient cultures for so many years now, and also the Kit Carson Park in Taos is interested in a Man in a Maze labyrinth. It would be a temporary one because they have, you know, temporary events there in the park, and so we're thinking of doing that too for the Taos Sacred Spaces. But okay.
Go ahead.
Then I guess I think the major project that I really want to be working on right away is designing and researching the permanent living labyrinth for Peace Center, which I don't know where exactly it's going to be. I think it's going to be in New Mexico because the vision in Chaco Canyon was in the Great Kiva. I was sitting in the Great Kiva, and I saw the people coming out of the ground and dancing in and out of the walls. And then I saw a glass dome over the whole thing, and I saw three rooms, under earth, on earth, where I was sitting, and above earth, which was up in the sky. And I showed these three rooms with the Dance of the Labyrinth in 1994 at Gallery 10 in Washington, D.C. I had an under-earth room, an on-earth room, which is now the present Dance of the Labyrinth, and I had an above-earth room. And I see this as a permanent art, science, technology center, and I intend to start working on it. And the final design, because that's what I feel my mission is, to leave this to the world.
Well, that is so exciting, and it's certainly appropriate for out there because there's no place else like the out there in terms of how close you feel to the stars at night, and you know, the clearness, the clarity that you get, and the ancient mountains which hold Itoi, the man in the maze, the sacred god, and the labyrinthine tunnels. So it's all so appropriate for that area of the country.
That's what I feel. And I would also hope that we would have other, probably not as huge or not as involved installations that would be permanent, like in the Washington, D.C. area. I'm looking for a permanent spot for Dance of the Labyrinth. Right now it's in a rental building, and I would like to find a permanent space for it. And who knows, in other parts of the world, too. We would like to put some, but I think the permanent center, since it was inspired by New Mexico, it needs to be there, you know.
Well, Sandra, guess what?
Center,
we have
the
a
main
call.
Center.
Okay,
the main
okay,
center.
We have a call. Okay, well, we actually have a caller, and the person's been waiting for quite a while. So let me see if I can get this person on. Hold on.
All right.
Hello, you're on the air.
Oh yes, thank you. I'm very interested in the priority project that Sandra Wasco Flood has been talking about as far as constructing a permanent center for the labyrinth. And can you tell me just a little bit more about that as far as educational, how you would bring people to the center, or what kind of educational programs you would be having, and how could we be a part of this, you know, just the regular public?
Could you just tell us your first name and where you're from, where you're calling from?
My first name is Sasha, and I am calling from New Mexico, Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Oh, perfect. Okay, go ahead, Sandra.
Okay, as far as the educational program, yes, I already described what the center would look like, but the educational program would be very intense. It would be relating to every single subject, and there would be a lot of science in that. And I think people could do, of course, astronomy. We would have the dome with the stars and the actual stars outside. But I think you could, because you are interacting, you're kind of like on stage. You're on stage. It's causing things to happen. You could do some sort of experiments like theories of relativity, and people who have walked my dance in the labyrinth say, well, it looks different from this point than the other point, you know. And who knows what all we could do as far as science. And we could also use science images, you know. We could use, I'm thinking of doing, having robots that you would interact with that would show the evolution of the dance. And we'd start with the fish and go up through the people. And these robots would be, they would be talking things. They wouldn't be just sitting, you wouldn't be just sitting in front of a computer screen and clicking around. You'd be actually interacting with them. And so I see a lot in the science field, of course, a lot in the art. I intend to include the actual outdoors environment. There's going to be trees and plants probably inside and outside as well with the labyrinth work. And of course, you have all the arts. You have the music. You have dance. And all these can be related to the center. And we would get people there, of course, by advertising. It might end up at a school, and so that would be, you know, and also on the tour list, you know, throughout New Mexico.
You could also add in the whole idea of sacred geometry with nature.
Yes.
And
sacred
science.
Geometry. We would have classes in sacred geometry. We would have classes for all ages. And there would be definitely three labyrinths, because there would be an under-earth room, an on-earth room, and an above-earth room. Now, my original idea was to have spiral for the under-earth and the above-earth rooms, and I think that's very appropriate. They did find a spiral underneath the Great Kiva in Chaco Canyon. And, of course, there's spiral galaxies in the universe and all that, you know. So,
it sounds very inspirational, and I'm just wondering, when are you going to start working on this permanent place where we can come and actually get involved your projects?
I'm going to start right away, actually, probably right in the new year. That's one of the things I'm going to be starting. And I'm going to be starting designs. And one of the other ideas, I want it to be so interactive that people can bring their own images from their own journeys, and they can use them and create their own labyrinth journeys. And they'll be able to pick whatever labyrinth design they like to walk. You know, whether they want to walk the Shark Cathedral Labyrinth or the Classic Seventh Circuit or a modern one or what. You know, there'll be all these choices. So there's going to be a lot of interaction with it.
Maybe you have somebody here, right here, who wants to be a part of your team, who wants to volunteer.
I think I might, actually.
Well, I think that would be very interesting. And I do have your website and everything and your connection and talking with you, and thank you very much. I'm very interested in what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Sasha.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay. Bye.
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 All right. That was great. Well, geez, there you go. I mean, the word is out, so maybe this will be a good jumping off place for you to find your people and get some space available for this.
Yes, yes.
Because that's the next thing you want to do, is to really get this going and make something
right.
happen. And we can say, and then you what might happen is that you'll have a group of people already in place to host the next convention there.
That's correct. That's correct. Yes. Yes.
Because it's all very synchronistic, which obviously is a key element in labyrinth work, and I'm sure you have experienced this many, many times.
Yes, definitely. I really feel like I the energy is passing through me, and I know this is what a lot of people say about the creative process, and I'm just sort of being led. And then when I open up and I relax and I don't think about any kind of ego trips or anything like that, you know, and I let go, then I'm shown the way, and it just works all the time.
And I don't know about you, but it also what I found is if a labyrinth wants to be built, heaven and earth will move out of the way for it to be built.
Yes, I found that, yes. And if it doesn't want to be there, it's really obvious, too, you know.
Yeah.
It really is, you know. Yeah.
Very strong, very clear. Well, this has been so interesting, and I'm so pleased to have finally gotten my technical glitches out of the way so we could have this interview. And I am really thrilled that you joined me today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, we're out of time now, and I would love to talk to you for another half an hour, but it's a busy time of the year, and I'm sure you're ready to go do whatever else you need to do. And we will stay tuned to your future work, and everybody, please keep an eye on her websites. And that's WASCO, WASKOART.com, and LivingLabyrinthsForPeace.org. And check those websites out. Sandra, you have done so much in your life. I was just amazed reading your bio and everything. And so I know that you'll succeed at this, and many, many blessings on your path. And I think your interview, this interview today really has honored my intention, which is to enlighten labyrinth neophytes and support labyrinth veterans with guests like you who provide a depth of information and personal experience not available through other sources. So this has totally met the bill, and I thank you so much again, and very, very happy holidays.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Labyrinths in the News in the Life category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana. Please join me next Monday when my guest will be Jose Cuesta. And he is a South American man who is installing very interesting labyrinths in Central and South America. And we will have him on next week and talking about these labyrinth installations and his work and where it all started. So join us next week. And thank you very much for joining me today. Have a blessed week in Lakesh.